The lyrics taking center stage on this, it definitely does, but I think that I still wouldn't, I just ignored everything Dean said because I'm obsessing over the fact that like you don't think, like you think they take themselves a bit too seriously with their lyrics, because I really don't think they do, because I think that, and again, maybe there's something changed on this album. But in the past, like, their lyrics have been fine. You know, there's not any part of their lyrics where I'm like, come on, guys. Like, that's dumb.
A little cringe. You posted cringe there.
Yeah.
You are going to lose subscriber.
They're still filling in with this rock and roll genre, right? Where, like, most rock and roll songs don't have these high-level advanced lyrics.
No.
And I would say that, like, they're still on par, if not better, than a lot of the, like, classic rock we would normally attribute to music that's, like, typically made like this.
Right.
And maybe I'm just being protective because I really like these guys, and I'm already upset that this album didn't work out for me.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with being a little protective. It's okay to have a place in your heart for certain things.
Yeah.
I just, like... It's probably just Champagne that did it for me. But even the other tracks, like just looking at what's being said and stuff like that, like I said, I totally understand what they're saying and why they're saying it, especially at this time. But at the same time, it's how they're saying it that makes me think that what they think they're saying is incredibly important and very clever. But that's just because I have... This is my first introduction. Like, this is what I'm given, right? And then I look at it and I'm like, wow, this is like, is there any... I didn't pick up on a lick of humor throughout the whole album.
Oh, there's definitely not.
Yeah, and then you get stuff like, champagne, champagne, realize, realize, realize. And I'm like...
Morpheus, Porpheus.
Oh, man.
Spiritual, well, lyrical miracle.
And that might even go back to my feelings on, and like, I don't want to dive too deep into this because we could like tread water into very, very questionable territory. But every single time that they open up their show, Lia Fey comes out and does a land acknowledgement. She welcomes ladies, gentlemen, and then goes on a very long list, including non-binary, non-gender conforming. I can't remember exactly all that she says, and I don't want to put words in her mouth. And the first time I heard that, I was like, wow, good for you. You know, like this big rock band is coming up in front of thousands of people, because I think I was at a big show the first time I saw them, and making a very big statement on this side, right?
Yeah.
And then the second time I heard it, it was the exact same.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, so you have a script you follow.
Yeah.
And I think we can kind of like tie that sincerity as well, you know? And like, not that I want to say there's anything wrong with, you know, her coming out and saying that, because, you know, regardless, like, it's a new crowd every time, whatever, yeah. and it's still good to kind of, like, come out and you're starting your show saying, hey, guys, just so you know, like, this is what we believe.
Yeah.
And we're not hiding away from it. Deal with it, you know? Whether or not that's, like, the, like, what they're thinking and the motive behind what they're saying. But, you know, I think then, like, yeah, when you talk about, like, their lyrics all make them seem like it's really important what they're saying.
Yes.
And, like, that's kind of the same vibe. And, like, their music almost makes it sound, I don't want to say performative, because, like, again, you know, July Talk isn't necessarily performative in the fact that, like, they actually put actions towards, like, they work with a lot of organizations, they do a lot of charity work, they give a lot of money, etc. But their music itself, yeah, like, it's kind of, like, it treads this weird line between, like,
if you don't mind me interrupting, it's,
oh, no,
like,
not at all.
It's like, it's a serious teaching lesson, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're taking the role of the teacher.
Yeah.
I was actually going to ask Dean a question about that. And I can't remember what it was. And I'm
safe
really
again, baby.
My brain just blanked. Oh, so you were talking about, both of you guys, actually, when you guys were talking about, like, kind of the back and forth insult, I would say cheeky nature of the first two albums.
Oh, for sure.
I didn't pick up on any of that in this album.
No. Not even a little bit.
And, like, they even highlight it in the second record with a lot of their songs. So that duet element was sort of emphasized in their last record, Touch, because a lot of the songs were, like, Beck and Call, Johnny and Mary, Lola and Joseph. So
I noticed that.
Yeah.
Like I haven't even
like
heard
they really
songs,
play up the sort of like the duality in their band.
Yeah. And while you were fixing the little mic issue we just had, I showed Chancellor like the one song, Lola and Joseph, because that's one of my favorite songs. But I think that also like highlights that so well, you know, and we were just talking about the fact, too, that like going back to that like element of cheekiness, like this song is about consent. That's like a very heavy topic, but they still manage to like talk about it in a way in Lola and Joseph where like you're jamming along, you're singing along, you know, but
yeah, and
then
it,
you're
and
still getting the message across.
And it's packaged within a narrative and within characters
as
opposed to them sort of preaching
and
saying like, this is what we think about this issue.
One of the things that reminds me of, and I don't think it's necessarily on that level just because I have such high praise for this song. Hey Ya by Outkast is the same thing where it's like this vessel that has so much within it that upon first listening, you're like, whoa, this is a banger. And you're just having a blast and you're like, I got sing-along parts. This is great.
Yeah.
And if you like sit down and actually understand what it's about, he's literally calling you out for having that first reaction. Like the whole song is about like, you're not even listening to me. You're just dancing. You're just singing, whatever. Like he literally says that in the song, right? And I think it's the same way with what you just showed me with that track is like, you know, this sounds like a cheeky back and forth guy, girl, like sauciness.
Mm-hmm.
And really it's about consent and what's okay. And like, there's a way to like package that and give it to people where on face value, it's one thing. But if you dig a little deeper, it's another.
Whereas, I love tracks like that.
Yeah.
Especially like fun party tracks, like you were saying.
Yeah. Whereas this, it's like this whole album is less of the package. And more just like a deconstructed message.
Yeah, the uncut stuff.
Yeah, where it's like, I got to get this off my chest. And it comes off as almost a little, like, correct me if you don't feel this way. It comes off as a little less creative.
It's a little gratuitous, I would say.
It kind of becomes more like, you know, your buddy who tells you something and then you go, oh yeah, you told me that before. And then they go, yeah, but did you hear? And then they continue and say it again. Yeah.
Could you imagine like having a friend who always brings up like certain things all the time and always like circles back to like certain bands or...
Yeah.
That would suck.
Well, especially when it's the Mountain Goats.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Homie, oh my God.
You guys want to take a look at my status card again?
Oh my God. Jesus Christ.
But... But yeah, it's sorry. It's okay. It's okay, Dean.
We lost Dean.
That was so much funnier than my hit. Okay, I'm good.
Yeah. But yeah, I feel like sometimes the packaging is the most fun part. Hey Ya by Outkast is an incredible example. Like, you don't even have to get into that song at all. And you can just have a blast. And that's okay. And yeah. I'm pretty sure even the members of Outkast have come and said, they're like, yeah, it's fine if you don't get it. Like, if you didn't look into it. That was the point, right?
Yeah, well, and I think, too, there's something to be said about, you know, not that I never want this to come across like, well, the way you're talking about this is not good.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's not how you should be sharing your message.
No, yeah, because you can do it in any way.
Oh, exactly. But there is something to be said about the effectiveness of sharing a really strong message when it's packaged like Lola and Joseph.
Right.
Or like Hey Ya, right? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, it permeates different levels of society so effectively.
Yeah.
Without... And people don't get their guard timeless. Up as much, right? So, for example, you know, you show up to someone and you're like, we need to have a conversation about consent.
Mm-hmm.
They might have, you know, the response of, well, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to talk about that. Whereas if it's like, hey, all these rock musicians are having these songs about consent, you're all of a sudden like, oh, I'm jamming out. And you're like, cool. Yeah. And like, it's permeating your brain without being like a flash in your face, right?
Yeah. Like, I can imagine... like we were talking about it earlier, and I don't always like this analogy of like playing it for your friends, because I feel like a lot of music should be just personal.
Yeah.
But sometimes there is times where you play stuff for your buddies, and like if you put something on that's just sometimes more accessible with a deeper meaning, it's a lot more of a shareable moment with other people in comparison to something that has even a shallow meaning that isn't necessarily as easy of a pill to swallow,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think with their previous stuff being so creative in the sense of the delivery, I think it's kind of like an injustice, for lack of a better word, for like the message to be delivered in more of a rudimentary way,
mm-hmm.
because they've shown that they can do it in different ways.
Yeah.
And they showed that they have, right? I think like I said, if this was the first album, if this was the first thing ever released by them, it would be a completely different story. I feel like we would have a completely different conversation about this.
Well, and I probably wouldn't have come into it with such like personal feelings about their prior stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and I think like this and you got to feel sympathetic towards like people like In July Talk and any other musician that tries to like do something different, because they've got all of us like, you know, crappy fans who are like, no, don't change. I like you before.
Yeah. Well, even if they did it differently, but like showed that they still have that creative edge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's different ways to do it. There's different ways to be different.
Yeah, be different in the ways that we want you to be different. Yeah,
exactly.
I want you to be as different as I will lay out here in my 28-point bullet form.
That's right.
In our 2-hour podcast.
Better all right, be taking
Dean,
notes.
Do you want to tell us about your favorite song?
Sometimes city sweats out, seasons never see the sun fall. You like to stay in north of it all. friend of mine. Always in the back alley now, she's looking for a light. She don't think about it every night.
My favorite song, on the same vein that we were just discussing about the duets, is Friend of Mine, because as far as I understand, is the only like really true duet style song on this record. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting one, because it does bring back, not so much in the sound, but in the subject matter of this song, a bit of that grit and a bit of that sort of like ugliness that they used to play with. There's lyrics about like having a mom who's addicted to gambling and just sort of being isolated and alone, but having this not even romance, because the song is called Friend of Mine, which sort of implies like a platonicness, or even if it is romantic, like the actual just having someone there with you is what is important. Having a friend is the thing that they focus on. But yeah, it's a, I think it's like a sweet little song about, you know, being in a rough situation or like, you know, an uncertain time in your life and having someone there with you, to be underwater with, as they say. It's sweet. And I really enjoyed it. It also sounds a bit different from the rest of the tracks.
Yeah, do you want to hear the album. Reason I don't like it?
Why is that?
It sounds like they're trying to be surf rock.
It is. It's got a little surf rocky, almost like folksy too. They have like a washboard in the background.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh.
It's weird.
But I mean, I must say I didn't actually even look at the lyrics until you were just talking about them. So like I like it a little bit better now that
yeah,
you said that.
But it's cool.
I think from like the sound standpoint, this one, and I think I might be wrong, but Good Enough was the other one. Both of them kind of had that bit of like a surf rock vibe, which mm-hmm. is just nothing I've ever heard from July Talk.
It was a weird direction, but
it doesn't work with the rest of their sound, and I feel bad saying that, but I'm a huge fan of surf rock, and they just like were like halfway there but not quite there, and it just didn't vibe for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. I'm just so caught up on the lyrics.
For which one? Friend of Mine?
Even Friend of Mine, yeah.
Yeah?
It just like, I feel bad because I couldn't do better. Like, there's no way I could do better. But then
none of us could, yeah. Like, we sit here and critique albums as if we could do anything different.
I was in a band where I didn't actually write lyrics. I just sang, and what was recorded I would have to remember later on. Like, I'm so bad at this kind of thing. but like, for some reason, there's like this taste in my mouth where I'm looking at this song and I'm reading through it again. And I think I like the message, but like, there's something about like the words used. Like, it seems very they really like one or two syllable words. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's really easy to work with.
Yeah, I think, and this is something that I've experienced with like pretty much every band that I even liked and researched for this show, is when you are reading the lyrics just flat out on a page, it's not the same.
No,
like just reading dry lyrics is completely flat, and anything that you read is going to sound sort of forced and hokey.
I'll show you how my brain is reading it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cities without seasons never see the summer fall. We like to stay north of it all. And I'm like, that's trash, bruh. But then the music obviously adds a lot more to it.
Oh, yeah. And I like those lines.
And it's honestly, I think that's the interesting part is, okay, so if you want to know, to our listeners out there, we have three different ways, I'm pretty sure, of how we listen to music. If I can say that.
Probably, uh-huh.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Dean listens to it usually with the lyrics in mind.
Yeah.
I listen to it usually mostly sonically, but with some lyrics in mind, usually regarding like the chorus and some verses.
Mm-hmm.
And you're mostly sonically, right, Steph?
Yeah.
And
well,
so,
and I think also, like, on top of that, I look for the whole flow of the album.
Yeah. You're more on the, like, emotional scale level, yeah, where it's like, how is this making me
Are
feel?
Are you calling the only woman in the room emotional?
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Wait.
I'm kidding. Oh, I'm kidding.
Wait a minute.
No, keep that in. That's staying in.
No, but you are right. I do admit I'm a very big empath. So,
but it's the same thing for me. Like, I don't know. The feel of an album is hugely a part of it. Like, 100%.
For sure.
But then,
well, and I mean, that's the whole reason we wanted to do the show, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, the album in total.
And then, but then I like, as soon as, like you said, like as soon as you pick apart the lyrics, it doesn't add up nearly as much as like the song or the album as a whole. Like, mm-hmm. if you're just looking at very particular things, so maybe I'm just going way too hard. I'm looking at this on the micro level now, and it's like, what's the point? Like, I already came to my opinion. This isn't helping.
Yeah, don't think any harder.
Yeah.
It's too bad that you weren't with us on the Nirvana episode that we did last week as well, though.
Oh, I would have loved to have been there.
But I think, like, well, I don't know what you mean by that, but I think that comparing the lyrics in Nirvana to the lyrics here, I get that Kurt Cobain was considered a very impressive songwriter, but like,
kinda.
To me, the lyrics don't add up in Nirvana, yet we like hold them to such a high standard. And like, right. I didn't listen to any part of that album and go, wow, these lyrics are really speaking to me. Whereas, and maybe it's because I have a pea brain, but like, this, to me, the July Talk lyrics, even in this album, and as I've said, like, I don't hold this whole album to a very high standard, but I still appreciate the lyrics in this a lot more than I would in like the Nirvana albums.
Yeah. Yeah. That's understandable. Yeah. Like, I honestly wish I was there, because like, I have such a weird back and forth with Nirvana in the sense where it's like, and I feel like you can do it with a lot of bands where you're kind of just like, I love it to death, but I also know it's not very good. I would never say that this is great, but I also love it to death.
That's what my parents say about me.
I feel like I'm having that problem with this album where I'm like, I don't really like it, but I'm not saying it's bad. I just don't really like it.
Yeah.
But I would still probably throw on a couple of these songs, you know?
Like what?
Yeah. What would be your like second fave?
My second fave, I would say I have a really hard time because I liked The News and I also like Governess Shadow, but I have issues with both of them again.
Ooh.
So
let's do a dig.
Well, 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 will you look at those lovely creatures? Look at that one. As tasty and tempting and toothsome and trim and tiny a tidbit. No. Let's see, where was I? It's too bad that she's not the real McCoy. Where we're for the CCP, and just
have a little bit more of that rock element. So when I was listening through, obviously when we do this, I listen to the record from front to back. I don't shuffle it or anything. So when we got down towards the news, I was like, oh my gosh, maybe like the rest of the album is going to be like the old July Talk that I love. You know, maybe we're going to get a hint more of that. And so you have the news, you have Governor's Shadow, and then they bring you back to see it through, and it's just not the same, and it's still sacred. But I like, they've kind of got more of that like distorted guitar sound again in it. Governor's Shadow has a bit more of like the two voices going on in it. But there's something about Governor's Shadow that's just like a little annoying to me. I think it's like part of the course that just kind of grates on me a little bit.
The silence and kindness, yeah, over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would put those on. I don't know if I would, like, in certain scenarios, like, I'd maybe throw those on, like, my gym playlists where I want that, like, in-your-face music, but I don't want to, like, get too caught up paying attention to it, you know?
Mm. Yeah, yeah. I feel like the rhythms throughout the whole album are okay. Like, not in comparison to their earlier stuff where it's, like, super driving constantly.
Yeah.
But I feel like, as a whole, like, you know, you got some movement in here every once in a while. And I felt like these two tracks were up there in kind of like the more energy compared to the rest of the album.
Yeah, for
sure.
Oh,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I think that's why I got so excited.
Yeah, right, you know? Right. Your hopes went up.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. There was one track that, and maybe you guys could fill me in, or maybe we could just have a quick look. There was one track that had like a synth in it. That was really wonky and reminiscent of like Neon Indian. If you guys
was
remember.
That the first track?
Was it the first
Identical
track?
Love? It that was the synthiest one that I heard.
Oh,
Yeah, yeah. So identical. I liked that only for the sounds used. Like, it reminded me a lot of, like, Neon Indian was the other one. Grizzly Bear. Just those kinds of, like, power pop synth rock bands, right? And I always liked that stuff. And then it kind of goes from that and kind of devolves over time a little bit into more, or rather less, of the spacious sounding instrumentation and more into very, like, basic instrumentation sonically. In case you weren't aware that I'm talking about music.
Well, and I think, though, too, if they had kind of kept up that really cool synth vibe throughout the rest of the album,
yeah,
that would have been cool. I would have been more into it, you know? Because I think, like, the way they kind of slowed down the first track and kind of brought about more of that dance vibe to it, it wasn't, like, the dance vibe was there, but it wasn't, like, it wasn't something you'd throw on at a club by any means.
No, it's not like Four to the Floor, yeah, like, yeah, you know, big banger hits.
Exactly. But if they had kind of, like, kept that going throughout the rest of their album, I would have liked it a bit more.
Yeah, it was a cool start.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I remember listening to it, and I was like, oh, sweet. Like, this is going to get really interesting. I genuinely believe, I think that's my favorite track on the album.
Yeah.
Is that first one.
Yeah. No, I
do enjoy it. Yeah, yeah. I agree.
It got me real hyped.
And especially they have that, like, little brass interlude at the end. Yeah. Little Chuck Mangione action, yeah, for you. We love that.
Hit me with that Chuck Mangione again.
Hell yeah. Heck yeah. Yeah, I would even say, like, maybe this is going too far, but I would even say that Peter, especially, like, in the opening of Identical Love, is almost going for, like, a Leonard Cohen style thing.
Oh yeah,
is that going too far?
I could hear that.
Yeah,
and I don't know if we're just saying that, though, because, like, Leonard Cohen also had that very, like, grimy, grungy,
yeah, yeah,
voice, especially in his later work. Like, the stuff that he released just before he passed was, like, very, like, low rumbly voice, right? Mm-hmm.
I was gonna say, I always think of Nick Cave when I hear his voice. Mm-hmm. And not in the sound wise, but more so just in, like, the inflections used and kind of, like, the monotone nature of it. Like, I just think of Right Red Hand whenever I hear his voice, mm-hmm, singing. And yeah, I think I felt that way with the intro too, and I, like I said, it kind of got me stoked.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, ooh, yeah, like, the next track is gonna be an absolute banger. And I think that's a really good way to set up an album.
Like, oh, for sure.
Of all the ways to do it, that is the way to do it. Just, like, this slow crescendo into something bigger.
Yeah. Right? No, I agree. I really did appreciate that. I think one thing, though, and I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on this, but, like, based on our conversation, it sounds like their singles that they released prior to this were the ones that are, like, they're the best songs on the album.
Yes.
Which, you know, Identical Love, Pay For It, and Governess Shadow were the three singles that they released prior.
Right, right.
And
okay.
I'm wondering, because my personal opinion on the matter is, I think that, yes, you obviously want to release singles that are your best work to get people hyped for the album. Sure. But then when you get the album and there's nothing else that matches it, it's, yeah, kind of a letdown. And, like, mm-hmm, I don't know what you guys think on this matter, but...
Well, sometimes... I had a conversation about this the other day where it's, like, if someone's personality or even a group of people's personality kind of is persistent throughout something, even if it's not the best thing in the world, it still has that pull that makes you kind of want to dig deeper because you feel like you're kind of understanding the personality a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, sometimes it doesn't work out that way. And then you kind of end up in this situation where as soon as you dig a little bit deeper, say with tracks that aren't the singles, you're kind of looking at yourself like, do I really want to go deeper? Because, like, I don't think I'm super impressed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How did you feel about it, Dean?
I don't know, like, the singles that they put out, Steph said that they were the best tracks. I don't know, because I really liked Friend of Mine, which was not a single, and also, right, Identical Love, mostly for the instrumentation, the synth and the brass.
Yeah,
and
but
stuff.
That was a single.
Was that a single too?
Yeah, that was their last single that they released before they released the album.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they released that one about a month ago.
Foiled again.
Well, and my issue too is that, you know, why didn't they save one of those for after they released the album? Mm-hmm. You know, like they released the first single on April 2nd. I remember I was like, oh, it's a little birthday present to me. But
yeah, what do you think they're gonna, what out of all the tracks that they haven't released as singles yet, I think Dean might be onto something in thinking that Friend of Mine would be the next single.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think especially because it does highlight both of them a lot better than the rest of the tracks do.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, the fans want to see it. The fans want to see the two voices.
Now,
folks, we do.
Now I'm thinking about it a little bit. Do you think they purposefully made this album so it wouldn't be as big of radio hits as previous?
Why would you say that?
Why would they do that?
Yeah, like why would they do that? Why would you say that? I don't understand the thought process.
So some bands do this, right? Where they're like, everybody wants this from me. I'm getting sick of it. I don't want to put this out anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Let's change it up completely. Let's not play what they want to hear. Let's do the opposite almost, right?
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering if like maybe they were sick of the old sound and wanted to just completely rewrite it, or if you think that they might feel as if it's like a kind of progression, like a natural progression. Like, do you think they just wanted to go cold stop on their old stuff?
Well, like we were saying before, though, like if that's what they were trying to do, they didn't do a great job of it, you know, because you still have Governor's Shadow is very reminiscent of their old stuff. Even, you know, like I said, Pay For It. It's a ballad, but it sounds similar to the ballads on their old records, you know, and they still pick out enough of the same themes, right? That like I was saying before, in my head, they still fit under the same genre.
Yeah.
You know, but there's obviously, you know, I think the most evidence of them shifting their sound is in Champagne.
Yeah.
But again, that's it. They don't have any other song on their album that's even somewhat similar to that track. You know, and like I said, if they kind of played off of more what they did with Identical Love, I could have seen that a bit more, right? Where they have that more like synth heavy music. That would have been really cool. And I think that would have been more of like, hey, we're trying to shift sounds if they played up on that. But it just kind of feels like this album is too all over the place to be them being like, oh, I'm sick of that, like our old sound, I want to switch it up.
Yeah.
You know, it just kind of sounds like they almost were maybe they were like, you know, I'm sick of my old sound, but now they're like floating in this weird abyss, you know?
It would have been so ballsy of them to just like release a noise album out of nowhere. Like, we want to change things up a bit. And it's just like trumpets, like, getting crunched by a hydraulic pressure or something like that.
Cool.
And then Peter Germanis is like low growly voice on top of it. And then every once in a while Leah Fade like chirps up with her higher voice. Yeah.
How about you, Dean? What do you think about the change?
I
know you like change.
As I said, I believe that the third album is the point at which a band has to start to break away from what they sounded like before. Because if you don't do that, then you're going to, you know, people are going to get bored of you. You're still going to have like diehard fans.
Yeah, like just look at Mumford & Sons.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
People hate them.
Yeah, they're really boring.
Yeah.
That's right.
Imagine Dragons.
Oh my God, we can't even.
They just took a left turn downhill very quickly.
Yeah. Oh my God. But yeah, so you have to grow and evolve. The thing about this album though, is that I feel like it doesn't have like a unified idea that it's working towards, or like a theme that they're interested in interrogating. And as they're trying a lot of different stuff and a lot of new stuff, but nothing really has that sort of cohesion to make it be like, oh, this is our new sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, as you say, they try like some synth stuff, and then they try like
this,
they have the gospel stuff
track,
and then they have a couple tracks that are very similar to their older stuff,
and then a little bit of surf rock in there.
Yeah.
Which makes
no
sense.
So it just leaves you sort of confused.
Yeah, and I think I'm really excited to hear what they do next, because I think whatever they do next is going to be more solidified.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if they go by their pattern of only releasing a new album every 4 years, this album is not going to keep like me or anybody else that goes to see them live satisfied,
right,
you know,
right.
Cause it's not enough to go off of.
Yeah. It'd be kind of disappointing. Especially with the, you know, mega hits that came out prior.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't imagine, like there are some good tracks here, but I can't imagine any of them like hyping up a crowd as much as their earlier work.
Yeah. Yeah. That stuff was party music.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Pay For It, which again is like one of my favorite songs. I would hate if they opened or closed their show with that.
Mm-hmm.
If that song's not right smack dab in the middle of their set, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, and
right.
like for a song that's supposedly one of like your better ones on the album, like that should not be the case. Mm-hmm. Right.
Your lead single. Yeah.
Yeah, because even like, you know, I don't hate a ballad that's used as an encore as long as it's a really good one.
Yeah.
But this one I wouldn't want as an encore.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like there was a lot of ballads on this. Like ballad style, not ballad in
the traditional definition.
Yeah, yeah. In content, but just like the sound and the somberness of it and stuff like that. There was a lot, like a lot more than I expected from a July Talk album for sure.
The only other track that I'd say is worth maybe mentioning is Life of the Party, because I was kind of so on the middle of that track that one kind of encompasses exactly how I feel about this whole album.
Yeah, yeah, because that one doesn't have Peter on it at all.
Yeah.
It's only Leah.
But it's still, the musically-wise, like the instrumentation is a little bit more in line with what you'd expect from their previous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Out of your mind, you must be, can't get
very reminiscent of like the end of bedroom pop era indie, that kind of like
people end start, of
yeah yeah
is that over
bedroom is pop it? Indie is still in yeah. its heyday
is everyone. Like if like it's sort of like on the downturn in that everyone is doing it now no, so it's, the market's gonna get saturated.
What I mean is
we just like jumped all over yeah. chance yeah. on that.
What I mean,
watch it
yeah yeah hey now my bedroom's gonna be so upset. No, I mean, when I say the end of bedroom pop indie, I mean indie as like independent music and not necessarily like studio produced. I mean like 2010-ish when people started actually getting like record deals to produce albums and stuff like that. So it ended up sounding heavily produced. And that's what this sounds like. It sounds like,
yeah.
you know, someone just got a record deal and what they did before was like, you know, with a keyboard on their bed and like a really bad microphone or something. And then now they have a studio. So it's kind of like got that vibe.
Yeah. But if they had done that with a keyboard on their bed.
Yeah.
I probably would have really liked it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's what I mean. It becomes one of those things where it's like, how much is this the producer and how much is of this is the mm-hmm. band?
Well, and that's something like, it's funny that you bring up the producer, because that's something that I really was thinking about while I was listening to this, that like, I think, I don't know who produced this, but it honestly, like, it kind of sounds like it's the producer that failed the band on this one.
I'm going to look this up while you guys talk for a bit, because I'm actually very interested in seeing who produced this album.
Because I feel like there's like so much of this album had potential. You know, I think any issue I have with some of the songs could have been very easily remedied with just like throwing a guitar riff here. All right, like
yeah,
how
just
about
speed it up
like
a
let's
bit.
Just like have a little bit of callback from Peter, like mm-hmm. let's, you know, let's do this right. And that's the role of the producer, right? It's the producer to step back and say, okay, what you've got here is good, how do we make it just that little bit better?
Exactly.
You know, and I think that it's ultimately whoever produced this, like I really wish that they would have kind of pulled that out a little bit better.
Yeah.
And again, it doesn't have to necessarily mean that it goes back to what their old sound was, but it just kind of pulls out the more familiar elements a little bit more so that the album becomes more digestible to the old fan base, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
I'm just mad.
Yeah.
I am the old fan base.
You know who produced it?
Who?
Dr. Dre.
Dean, you're fired.
All right.
It was produced by like a whole team.
That makes a lot of sense now.
Wow, okay. I'll read you the names. It was produced by Burke Reed, Graham Walsh, David Plowman, and Milan Sarkadi. And all of them together have worked with Courtney Barnett, The Drones, Julia Jacklin, Holy F, which I will
yeah,
not pronounce
no,
their whole
Graham,
name.
No, Graham Walsh yep. is the lead of Holy F.
Yep, Metz, Brendan Canning, Young Clancy, Michael Rolt, Newt Quire, Said the Whale, and then their producer or their mixer was the guy who has mixed Beck, Cat Power, and Andy Schaaf. Wow. That's a powerhouse of a team.
Yeah,
but that makes so much sense why there's no cohesion in the album. I'd be really interested to see what
like
songs Graham Walsh produced, though.
Yeah.
Because he did, if I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure he did Young Rivals' second last album before they stopped touring together.
Oh, really?
And that album is phenomenal, but it's got like, and I mean, even with Holy F, like that is all very synth heavy music. And I'd be interested to hear if he did Identical Love.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh
and,
yeah.
Yeah. But again, like I'm a huge fan of his work.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, I've become everything I hate. I'm a huge fan of this producer's work. but in all honesty, like I love that kind of synth sound that he brings to the table with it.
Oh, yeah,
and I would have loved to hear more of that. I would be really interested if he like, he definitely, you can tell he didn't produce things like, you know, Friend of Mine and stuff.
Yeah. I wish there was kind of like a in the studio access that we could have seen from this album.
Mm-hmm.
Like something, mm-hmm. something where it's like the process of them recording it and just kind of seeing like the progress of how it became what it ended up and seeing where it might have been with the original ideas. Because I feel like that's a lot of big names. Very well-known producers, some of them are.
Okay. Okay, anyway, Graham Walsh, if you're listening to this and you could tell us what songs you produced on this album, I'd really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Yeah, thanks, bud.
Yeah, thanks, big guy. Miss you.
Also, if you want to come on our show.
Yeah, friend of the pod.
Yeah, they had quite a team. I don't know. Dean, have you ever gotten super into, like, producer side of things?
Not
no
at way. All.
Have no, you never have you not, looked. Have you not thought about it much?
No, not really. Like, I know I can only talk about the Mountain Goats. I just know Owen Pallett produced the latest Mountain Goats record, and it had some interesting things on it. I was like, cool. Thanks,
yeah.
Owen Pallett.
Yeah, no.
But, you know, you've got the one producer, and yeah. that whole album has a cohesive sound.
It's very
sound.
Different. Yeah.
Yeah, this has four producers and
with
a mixer.
Like four different sounds.
Yeah. Crazy. Wow. Yeah. Okay. We cracked the code.
Yeah, all right, folks. No. You heard it here first.
Welcome to the listening party. We crack codes.
But folks, thank you very much for listening to Listening Party. Do we know what we're listening to next week?
I don't even know. I think we are prepping. I don't know if this will be next week, but stay tuned for it. We're prepping for a really cool special edition show where we're going to bring to you our favorite Polaris Prize nominee albums, shortlist nominee albums.
Mm-hmm.
So stay tuned for that. And if you guys have a little something to say, feel free to tell us. We've got an Instagram and an email.
Wow.
Yeah. So our Instagram is listeningpartycfrc and our email is listeningpartycfrc@gmail.com.
Ayo.
That's called brand cohesion, baby. We love that.
And we want to hear from you lovely folks out there.
Mm-hmm. Biddy.
All right.
That was the most like rough ending we've ever done. I was